Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 44th episode of the Exploring Antinatalism podcast, a podcast all about the subject of antinatalism created by antinatalists. My name is Amanda Oldfan-Sukenik, formerly now known as Forever Wolf Films on YouTube, and today I'm speaking with the author of The Princess and the Oracle, the world's first antinatalist children's book, Sarah Shackley, also known as Inanna Goddess.
Welcome to the Exploring Antinatalism podcast, Sarah.
Thank you for having me, Amanda.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my pleasure. Let's start out with just the most basic of questions. Who is Inanna? Was there anything you'd like to say about yourself?
Okay, so my name is Sarah, and I'm a construction student in my first year, second trimester, and I'm a journalist by trade. I've been interested in antinatalism since 2017, when I started following fellow antinatalists on Twitter and Reddit. I've published an antinatalist children's book, as you said, The Princess and the Oracle, and I'm in the process of finishing off a book for adults titled Honoring the Dishonorable, The Truth About Our Parents.
Yes, excellent. I have read what you have of that book so far on your website. I really enjoyed it. I definitely want to ask you some things about it in a little while. That's really interesting that you sort of got interested in the subject through Twitter and Reddit. Twitter antinatalism is really interesting. It's very unique from, I think, like the rest of antinatalist social media. So around what year was that you started to get it? You found all that?
Well, there's a bit of a backstory. It started, my friend, she had sort of gotten me out of religion and challenged my beliefs. I was born and raised a Muslim. So my friend had gotten me into Gnosticism, and she recommended John Lash's book called Not in His Image. So I read the book, and in one of his interviews, he said the Gnostics were so extreme, they were against procreation. And my friend was really hardcore into the child-free stuff, but she didn't quite know what antinatalism was. And similarly, I'd come across the voluntary human extinction movement, which I thought was kind of absurd when I heard about it. But then after a while, so I think that I was sort of destined to find antinatalism. And similarly, my mother, she grew up quoting poetry from Abu Ala al-Ma'ari. So he's the antinatalist poet. And so when you've got all this coming at you, it's your destiny.
Yeah, it does kind of sound like you did kind of have it coming from all sides. So it was just sort of an inevitability at a certain point.
Mm.
Yeah. Sarah, why are you an antinatalist?
Well, there's many reasons to be an antinatalist, but the main ones would be consent, the genetic lottery, uncertainty, economic enslavement, existentialism, futility. Then there's sort of the secondary reasons like environmental catastrophe, economic collapse, social unrest, and the rise of statism.
Yeah, the reasons are seemingly infinite, almost.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that. I'm always curious to ask, how do you define antinatalism?
Definitely a negative value assigned to birth, and to quote a passage from the Antinatalist Manifesto, we are born of needs that are non-satisfactory, engender pain, and to meet our needs we need to constantly put in efforts and struggle, and happiness tends to escape. And similarly, My father has always had this philosophy of no harm, no injury.
Yeah.
So I think it all sort of fits in together.
Sarah, you are, of course, the author of the world's first antinatalist children's book. I mean, you could make the argument that Life Sucks is coloring book is a children's book, although you could also make the argument that it's more geared towards adults. But your book is called The Princess and the Oracle, which I can't wait to talk to you all about. But I was curious, I mean, just are you also a big fan of, like, you know, fairy tales and the fantasy genre? And do you have any favorites, you know, within that kind of storytelling that have been, like, a big influence on you?
Well, for me, I think that the reason I chose a fairy tale genre is because it's a propaganda war that we're at. When we're young children, we are bombarded with, you know, Cinderella and Snow White and all these type of fairy tales, and they're self-destructive because they teach children and encourage the propaganda of the life script. So I think it's because I grew up with fairy tales and Disney as a child. Now that I look back on my childhood, I see this whole playing with dolls and all of that sort of thing as really priming children to have to reproduce and feel that pressure. So as an antinatalist, I felt it was my duty to try and counter that. And I've got, like, more ideas in the future to expand on that, because children need to be given an alternative. There's nothing set in stone.
Yes, absolutely. No, I 100% agree with everything you just said. Yeah, it's like, so for you, it's more like, those genres are it's a tool, like, in other words. I mean, it's a necessary, I like the way you said it, it's like a propaganda war, and I agree with you 100%. It's like we have to utilize some of these avenues, some of these tools, and sort of know how to speak that language, but in different terms, right?
Mm.
Yeah, well, that's exciting that you're planning more. I definitely want to ask you more about that later. How do you most engage with the work of other antinatalists? I mean, do you read many antinatalist books, watch many antinatalist videos? And you spoke a little bit about Reddit and Twitter already, but I mean, what is the extent to which you engage in antinatalist social media?
In terms of social media, aside from Twitter, not really that much. I read the books because I'm autistic, so I like the books better than the lectures. But from time to time, one of my friends recommends some Amendum videos for me, so I get excited to listen to them because he has some very unique quotes, and I've tweeted some of them out because they're just edgy and they've got so much information and uniqueness to them. So I'd like to maybe one day transcribe some of what his work into, like, aphorisms or quotes, because I think that would help spread the message.
In addition to being a philosophical position, as you know, antinatalism over the last 10 years or so has also become a social movement as well. What is your general exposure to that side of things? Like, and just sort of how do you feel about it? You know, what is your opinion of this side of antinatalism, the activist side?
I think it's wonderful, but it takes a lot of courage, because usually I'm one of those people that likes to find things on my own. But at the same time, if, say, I was a pronatalist person and some antinatalist came up to me on the street, or child-free person, and I would like to know why they are that way, because I always like someone to challenge my beliefs and give me some food for thought. But I think it's wonderful that it's growing as a movement in terms of the social activism, because so many people are indecisive. They haven't made up their minds yet. So they need to feel supported and to have those networks out there. That's a very good foundation for everyone.
Well said. Yeah, and it absolutely, I 100% agree. And it's been wonderful seeing that start to take place on a global scale too. Because, I mean, as you said, yeah, it's, you know, people need that. There is no support system, you know, in place for people of an anti-procreative mindset. And so it's, yeah, it's wonderful that we're starting to find each other. How do you personally feel antinatalism intersects with other social and ethical issues such as atheism, veganism, and the right to die?
I feel generally with antinatalists, I've hardly met anyone who identifies as religious. Quite a significant amount are vegan. And the right to die, I haven't met anyone who's, I've met one person who's pro-life, and he's argued that antinatalism, the consent argument can be used against abortion. But in terms of euthanasia, I think everyone's on the same page.
As you may know, antinatalism is sometimes split up into four generalized categories. Antinatalism, which is both its own category, as well as an umbrella term. Ephelism, vehement, the voluntary human extinction movement, and child-free. I know you've spoken a little bit about some of these already, but do you have any, you know, extra thoughts on any or each of these?
Do you mind defining ephelism for me?
So I don't see much, personally, I don't see much separation between antinatalism and ephelism, because I think it's perfectly reasonable to, I mean, I've seen evidence all over the place that people that come from an antinatalist mindset is are perfectly capable of also understanding an ephelist perspective. But it's sometimes antinatalism is anthropocentric, doesn't have to be. It can also be sentiocentric. David Benatar's antinatalism is sentiocentric, for instance. But ephelism never wavers from that. It is always a sentiocentric form of antinatalism. And it's a form of antinatalism that puts more of an emphasis on the activism and also the ending of all life, basically. You know, so, but again, I think that there's, as time goes on, there's plenty of overlap between what antinatalism is. They're very, very connected and similar to one another. But I think that I would almost say the social movement aspect of ephelism is almost more, there's less hesitance about that side of it than I think what antinatalism is currently. How do you think of it?
I think that I'm a little bit on the hesitant side just because of the consent argument.
Uh-huh.
But overall, I align with everything else. As you said, they all overlap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it's a small movement, so we can't afford to have any infighting. We have to be united.
Yeah, that's certainly something that I've tried to my best to, you know, that I've tried to fight for, is that, you know, yes, we have these huge differences as antinatalists. At the same time, you know, we as you said, we're such a small movement, and, you know, natalism is such a giant force that it would be good if we could unite and at the very least, you know, reasonably talk out our differences as opposed to being at war with one another, which is so often the case.
Definitely.
Do you consider yourself an antinatalist artist, and do you consider yourself an antinatalist activist?
Definitely a little bit an advocate or an activist, and not really so much an artist, maybe just an author.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, interesting. All right. Well, now let's talk a little bit about your antinatalist children's book, the Princess and the Oracle. Do you mind if I read the abstract of the book, the little blurb about it that's on the Amazon site and your website?
No, please go ahead.
Are you concerned about procreation from an ethical landscape and the oversaturation of pronatalist propaganda children are inundated with? Does overpopulation, potential economic collapse, and environmental catastrophes concern you? Written in the format of a fairy tale, this book will encourage children to think twice before they decide to become parents. In The Princess and the Oracles, Sarah Shackley takes you on a journey that begins in the kingdom of the Uricates, ruled by Princess Sophie and her husband Prince James, who, with the help of the kingdom's oracle, Dame Delilah, pursue their dreams to become parents so that they have future heirs to the throne. With her strong and reliable connections to the leader of the Legion of the Storks, Dame Delilah helps make their dreams come true, but they encounter many difficult obstacles ahead before they decide to take their journey in a new direction that will forever redefine the future of their kingdom. She aims to re-educate children on the ethical nature of their existence in society while providing them with alternative pathways towards meaning, happiness, and prosperity. So it's a beautiful little book. I mean, it's a short story. And, you know, obviously it's packed with some very important meaning behind it. It is, obviously a really important message for children. Can you tell me, how did this project first come about?
I was inspired by a conversation I had with one of my friends who, Antoine Sugar, who I dedicated the book to, and he helped me with some of the corrections and editing. And I was concerned about the fairy tales and all this cartoons and things that promote natalism for children. So I said to him, we need to have children's books that are antinatalist. We need to have antinatalist video games. We need to have... So we just started throwing back and forth all these ideas, and then I sort of came up with a draft just out of the blue, and he said to me that it wasn't quite very good. I just needed a little bit of adjustments, and so I decided to publish it because I've always sort of wanted to write children's books, and definitely... children need something different.
It's wonderful. I don't know Antoine Sugar as well as I probably should, although I'm familiar with them on Twitter, if I'm not mistaken. No, that's lovely. Well, it's wonderful that you found a collaborative partner in that way. Oh my goodness, I'd love to see antinatalist video games, and it'd be wonderful. There is some, I should have done a little bit more research into this, but there is a couple of different child-free children's books. Have you read any of those? Have you seen any of those?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I'll have to send you some links to those. Again, I haven't read them myself. But I think there's at least one or two, and but nothing like what you've created, which is a full-on antinatalist fairy tale. Aside from honoring the dishonorable, the truth about our parents, which we'll discuss in a little bit, is this your first book, or did you begin that one before this?
No, this is my first book.
Amazing. Okay. The illustrations by Muhammad Bilal. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. They're very interesting. I mean, what can you tell me about the artwork in the book?
Well, I went on Fiverr and I looked up someone with good reviews for the illustrations, and he had made a couple of mistakes, but we went back and tweaked them, and I'm happy with the final result. Because it was my first book, I just wanted something very basic.
Oh, that's kind of amazing. You found somebody on Fiverr. Was it difficult to pitch, the idea of an antinatalist book to some, random artist? Where they were. What was the reaction they had, to working on something like this?
He just said to me, I'm more than happy to do it. And, I look forward to illustrating your next book.
Okay, cool. Yeah, if I mean, I think it really adds, the illustrations do add a lot to the story. I mean, if I make one criticism, I would love to see the book reprinted, you know, just with some of the images sort of form, you know, some of them are a little stretched out. But again, I think they really added so much to the piece. What has the general reaction to this book been so far?
A couple of my friends have bought it to support me, and one of my friends, who's a parent, bought the book for her daughter, and said to me, my daughter will read it and give you feedback. I haven't heard back yet from them, but another friend of mine also, she's got children, grandkids, and she fosters, she wants to buy it as well. So they're doing it more to support me. I keep trying to explain to them, this is antinatalism and this is what it is, but they insist on it because to some extent all my close friends are parents, and
yeah,
they've all told me they regret having their children as much as they love them.
Yeah, it's amazing how many parents do vocalize that. In my own experience too, it's really something. No, I mean, my next question to you was, you know, has this book been given to real children? And if not, you know, is that something you plan to do, see what happens? So obviously, based on what you're saying, it has been. You know, there's always been sort of an ongoing discussion in the antinatalist community of, like, how young to expose, you know, children to these ideas. Like, is it going to be damaging to them if they're exposed to it too early? I have mixed, you know, feelings about that personally. I was just curious what maybe your feelings about that are. Is there too young? You know, is there definitely like a wrong way of doing it and a right way of doing it?
I think that children are more intelligent than what we give them credit for, and they always put us on the spot with the fact that they have no filters and they just ask questions, and it's just their way of discovering their world. So yeah. I think that with them, how would I say, is that they sort of, they're too sheltered by adults. Like, adults don't want to explain certain things to children, like, for example, death, because they think it's traumatizing. And even when I had first written the book, Antoine had said to me, this book is a bit heavy for children. It's got so much death into it. But I think that because, you know, children are lied to constantly with, you know, Santa Claus, the Tooth Fairy, those kind of things, they appreciate honesty more. And one thing me and Antoine have in common is that we are very, all the children of our friends and people in our networks, they love us. And the reason is we talk to children like they're adults. Yeah. We tell them everything honestly. So I think that children will later on in their life appreciate that when they look back, that they weren't too sheltered and they're better prepared for the challenges life has to offer. When they have a guardian or trusted adult that tells them the truth and they can come to them for advice, and that obviously the message has to be gentle, and with antinatalism, it's quite pessimistic. So we have to give them a glimmer of hope. That's when I was writing the fairy tale, I wanted to give a happy ending. I don't want something depressing that would traumatize them. So you have to put in the elements of humor in there as well.
Right.
A bit of light to, so they have the subliminal message in their head, but they're not scarred by it. They look at it lighthearted.
Yes, no, so many good points. So many good points. You know, I totally agree with you about the use of humor. I love, you know, hearing how much, you know, I think that you value and understand that children need antinatalists in their lives. Like, it's a very important thing that I think we can offer younger generations is this completely different perspective on the life that they will, you know, go on to lead. And I just think you make an excellent point too about, you know, how yes, you know, a little bit of antinatalism can be seen as somehow dangerous, if I can put that word on it, but we do so much dangerous shit to kids constantly. We lie to them. We paint the world with colors that they're never going to see, you know, so to speak. So, I mean, you know, the normal way of maturating them into our culture is so vile and so dangerous and so destructive that that's really what should be seen as the negative thing, not, you know, exposing them to a little bit of antinatalism, especially, you know, curated in the way that you have, where, you know, it's in no way gonna hurt them. I think on your blog, you know, you've had some really interesting thoughts about the sort of, you know, tension for you in regards to, on one hand, you know, not wanting to lie to children and really, you know, being very passionate against that, but also understanding the value of fairy tales. I apologize, I don't remember exactly where this quote comes from, but you say in one instance, I don't want to transition children right away from blue-pilled fairy tales to black-pilled realities. So I continued with the magical thinking and fairy tales, but I tried to provide a happy ending. The key is always balance. Knowledge is strength, and telling children the truth will help arm with tools to prepare them for difficult realities they may have to face ahead. And yeah, I absolutely. I mean, this is a fascinating challenge, really. So I'm just curious if you can tell me a little bit about, you know, how you found that balance, because I think you did within the piece. Absolutely.
I think it's always sort of having a pros and cons kind of list. So having the heavy stuff, but sort of lining it with a bit of things that are comforting as well. So, and then looking back, because, I mean, my friend had said to me that, like, they grew up with Bugs Bunny and with some violence in their cartoons, but it wasn't as sort of traumatic. I said to them, children see all kinds of things in media that are violent and unpleasant. So, you know, just sort of lining it with something comforting is the key.
So you've said this a bit already. You do have some plans to continue, you know, your work with antinatalist children's books. Can you tell me anything about what the future of that work holds? Do you think you'll use the same characters over again? Will these characters become part of a series?
I think that I will probably have a completely different book. That's sort of more geared towards environmental activism from the antinatalist side. So okay. I had an idea about children sort of looking into the future of the planet and then sort of with similar kind of themes. So I have yet to sort of get started on that one.
No, that's exciting, though. That's very exciting. Okay, well, I'll be looking forward to seeing that. I think it's safe to say that a great deal of your work comes from the perspective of, you know, antinatalism as an important and missing piece of child welfare advocacy. And I think what I love most about what you're doing, and I completely agree with you on this, is you speak in some of your work about how, you know, you began your antinatalism from sort of a more personal place of personal pain. And then it sort of, again, shifted over to this more, you know, concern for child welfare advocacy. Do you mind telling me a little bit about what that whole process has been like for you and about sort of how you feel about that child welfare advocacy aspect of your antinatalism?
I think that for me, like, the fairy tales were very self-destructive to me, and they contributed heavily to my depression. I even tweeted about this, and so many other antinatalists in the community feel the same way. They're looking for honesty, and I remember watching this video on YouTube where this guy was talking about children's stories, and there was one that was more aligned with reality. And he appreciated that book as an adult and reading it as a child because it wasn't so censored with all this nonsense and all of that. And so I look back now and then with the advocacy, and I see that children definitely need an advocate because this whole world is skewed in favor of parents, adults, the state, and there's no one to advocate for them. That's why when the author of the Antinatalist Manifesto made that five-minute speech at the UN, I mean, we need people like him and other people, you know, really advocating for children, because everyone's busy making decisions in their own interests or what they claim is best for the children, but it's always for them. And we always hear the, you know, what about the children argument, but it's always laced with selfish kind of motives.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about your other book, the Honoring the Dishonorable, The Truth About Our Parents, which I really enjoyed. It is, of course, available on your website, and I do hope that you finish it. So it's an unfinished book. It's about 60 pages, I think, at the minute. I was wondering if you would mind describing what this book is about for our audience, and maybe a little bit about what your intentions have been behind writing it.
This book sort of expands kind of with the children's book, but for adults, because a lot of my audience on Twitter, they tend to want adult books published by me rather than children's. So I decided to look at the culture behind parenting and how it's over glorified, and parents are put on a pedestal, whether they're good or bad. And I mean, it's like as soon as you become a parent, someone's fingers snap and you have all this respect and status. And so I wanted to look at challenging that in a book for young people to read, and to sort of extrapolate the culture behind this, and to sort of think twice about the reality of the position of parents, because so many people do destructive things because their culture worships parents. I mean, I look at it in my own Islamic culture. I see it in Asian, African, Indian culture. And it's fascinating to look at that. And yeah, really, your reality breaks down once you see that. So just challenging that and having counter arguments out there for people, that would really help push antinatalism a bit more.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. Well said. You know, it's like it kind of reminded me a little bit of Sarah Perry's Every Cradle is a Grave in some respects, just in the way that you're sort of breaking it all down. But it's also sort of a handbook, you know, in a sense, you know, because you are laying out the arguments, and it almost does have like a textbook would be the wrong way to say it. But it's a real like educational piece in a lot of ways, I think. And I agree. I think it's an excellent means of, like, you know, for younger people especially to just get a kind of a hold of this whole thing. So I'm really excited about it. I mean, I really did enjoy it. May I ask why it at the minute has remained unfinished, and where are you as far as getting it completed?
Because I'm a full-time student, I haven't had the chance to work on it, but I'm going to be taking a gap year from my study. So I'm going to dedicate all my time to getting it done before the end of this year. And I will, it's sort of a gift to my antinatalist audience on Twitter because they've been very loyal. It's a contribution that's free for people, but obviously I'll have a print version on Amazon and to help people. And at the end of the day, this is kind of a grassroots movement. So we have to contribute as much as we can. And
Amazing. Amazing. Oh, I really look forward to that. And that's incredible. Yeah, no, you have a lot on your plate. Writing books is really, really hard. It's an incredible contribution that you're giving to the community. So thank you for that, Sarah. Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the website, Inanna Goddess. Where does that name come from?
That one comes from an ancient Sumerian goddess. So obviously my parents come from Iraq. So my friend had told me to start a blog, and she said choose a name that's connected to your heritage. Unfortunately, it's a fertility goddess, she has a lot of superpowers and depicted on ancient Sumerian tablets and artifacts. So it started off as a personal kind of blog, and then I decided to add the antinatalist work to it, and I'm thinking about publishing more antinatalist articles because they seem to get the most hits on the blog.
Yeah, no, it's a great website. I mean, I really, really, really appreciate, you're very candid, and you're very generous with what you expose and share about your life and your experiences. And I think coupling that with, the antinatalism, it's just a very powerful piece, like taken as a whole, the whole website. So I've really, I haven't got to read everything on it, but I mean, I have read quite a lot of it. And I very much enjoyed it. I think I wish more antinatalists were producing this kind of work, because it's very personal. It's very sort of exploratory of the antinatalist as a human in the world, but then on top of it, it's a lot of really great activism, and it's a lot of great philosophy, and it's a lot of great active production of, antinatalist projects. So I think you've really laid out a lot for us on the website, and I really do encourage people to go check it out. You started writing it in October of 2019, so it's been around for a little while. The tagline or the heading, I'm not sure what to call it, for the site is A Journey Towards Breaking Free into Higher Realms. Can you tell me what that means?
Basically, it's sort of like breaking free from the pain and oppression of existence, and higher realms is enlightenment, and antinatalism to some degree, I consider a form of spiritual enlightenment.
Okay, interesting. I really enjoy and appreciate how much you write about antinatalism from the perspective of your Middle Eastern culture, or should I say how being raised in Middle Eastern culture has been a part that's, nurtured your arrival at antinatalism. And I was just curious if there's anything you would like to say about this aspect of your work. And I was also curious what your thoughts are on the emergence of Middle Eastern antinatalist communities online.
Well, our culture is definitely very pro-natalist, and children are a huge part of the culture, and it's very sacrificial in the sense that you sacrifice everything for your children and your children do the same thing in return. But it's also very toxic as well, because it overlaps with narcissism and narcissistic abuse. So it sort of needs to be tackled, like, just like Raphael Samuel said, you don't owe your parents anything, kind of thing. The culture needs to shift towards that, so then people think twice before procreating. Obviously, when I talk to Middle Eastern people, including my parents, about antinatalism, I have two strategies when I talk to people. Either I discuss the child-free stuff or the antinatalism directly. So with the Middle Eastern culture, I can't talk about child-free because it comes off as a bit materialistic, superficial, that kind of thing. So if I was to argue from antinatalism, people would be more receptive to it. Whereas in contrast with the West, child-free is a better way to sell it to them, because they look at it as more from a materialistic, to some extent it can be from kind of maybe a little bit of a responsibility sort of perspective, as in if you know you're not fit to be a parent, you're not. With regards to the Middle Eastern activism online, I haven't really seen much of it, but I was very happy to see that the Lebanese director had made Capernaum, the antinatalist movie. So that's really resonating, because we have so much war and conflict and so many orphans. I always tell my mum we have 5 million orphans in Iraq because of all these wars. There's children selling themselves on the street. So then that goes back with the whole child's rights advocacy. Like, I look at some of our leaders, they had really rough childhoods. They grew up to be tyrannical dictators, but they're byproducts of our society. Our society created them, and then we complain about them. We want them in prison, or we want them executed. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, either the whole society is responsible for the child in the sense that it takes a village to raise a child, or, you know, you're going to have hostile children pretty much causing destruction and getting back at society.
100%. I think your work, as I've said, you know, before, I think it does an excellent job of really showing the truth about the lives of children. You know, what we put them through, who they grow up to be, the, you know, just the incredible burden that we place on these tiny little shoulders so thoughtlessly. You do an excellent job of summing up just the myriad number of ways that this burden manifests itself in their lives. We lie to them, we dominate them, we sentence them to be not only victims, but aggressors, you know, of narcissism and all kinds of things. So I really do think that's, I'm repeating myself a bit, but I think that's a huge piece of the value of your work and what you're bringing to the table and articulating so well. I forgot to ask this before, but do you think that, you know, it is really interesting that that Inanna, the Inanna goddess, is a fertility god, which I hadn't really realized. But that would make an interesting, you know, kind of like you could kind of reclaim her, you know, in a sense, in that kind of way, as like an antinatalist character. Like maybe she's being, you know, just sort of in terms of a fairy tale reimagining of what that character is. Do you feel like that's sort of what you're doing with her?
Perhaps, yes. Because fertility doesn't necessarily have to mean children. It can also mean abundance and, you know, livestock, or sort of like a good harvest in a season, sort of like the Fertile Crescent. So, yeah, maybe it's looking at fertility from a different angle.
Yeah, I think so. I think you could definitely use her as a kind of character towards that. I think you are in a sense. I know in your blog the subject of narcissism and how it shapes and poisons the lives of children, how it's affected your life, and how it's a big reason for your own antinatalism is a big part of your message. Can you tell me just a little bit about your feelings on that? And I am also a big fan of Sam Bachman, by the way. But yeah, no, I mean I see antinatalists write about narcissism quite a lot, and it is such an important subject. But I think you articulate it in a very strong fashion. Yeah,
I think that having children is sort of very narcissistic. And you're sort of, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but Sam Vaknin has a video on his second channel about all parents being narcissists.
Yes.
And I quoted the entire passage in my book because that video hadn't been seen by many people. So I think that my friend had said to me that I need to heal from my trauma and the writing really helps. So she said I could help a lot of people with sharing my experiences. So that's how I got into it. It was initially for sort of narcissism, but then it evolved into more topics that I'm interested in.
Sarah, you are, of course, one of the entrants this year for the 7th annual Why Are You an Antinatalist contest. Thank you. I wanted to say thank you so much for your participation. I really enjoyed your entry. I mean, I was a little bit, I don't like to draw like special attention to, you know, to each entry just because, I don't want to influence voting and whatnot. But I did want to point it out that I thought the way you laid it all out was extremely powerful. And I love this sort of like breaking down of, you know, primary reasons for being an antinatalist and these secondary reasons. And so your primary reasons, if you don't mind me reading them out, were consent, genetic lottery, uncertainty, no guarantees except death, economic enslavement, state cattle, which I think is a great expression, existentialism, futility, no will. And then your secondary reasons are environmental catastrophes, social unrest and religious conflict, economic collapse, austerity and inflation, misogyny, statism, loss of individual and collective sovereignty. So, I just thought it was a very powerful piece. Did you write all of it specifically for the contest, which is a very, very generous entry? Yeah.
What's happened was Antoine Sugar had sent me the link to the contest.
Okay.
And he said to me, I reckon you would be good at this. Just give it a try. So
yeah.
I'd realized I hadn't written a post on my blog about why I'm an antinatalist. So I just wrote it out of the blue. And then I decided to try my luck with the contest.
Yeah, well, I think you produced a very, very powerful piece. I think sometimes people think that, you know, the written entries are at some sort of disadvantage, you know, over the video entries, but I don't think that's true at all. The last couple of years, the written entries have just been so powerful, and yours is absolutely no exception. So, I just think it's a great site. I think you're producing really great work. I just have a couple of other questions about, you know, just sort of more general stuff. I mean, if you don't mind me asking, I mean, what do your friends, family, and, you know, coworkers, colleagues think about your beliefs with antinatalism? Is this something that you're open with to people in your day-to-day life?
Oh, I'm very, very open. So the first, when anyone asks me, do you have children? I say no, and then they imply I'll change my mind or I'll go out and have children later. And then I give them all these arguments for why we shouldn't have children, similar to the why I'm an antinatalist essay. And some of them give me funny looks. This is more from colleagues. My parents, they're very supportive. They actually helped fund the production of my children's book. And, you know, my mum said to me, if we had come across antinatalism when we were younger, maybe we would have considered it, even though my parents are very conformists. So it's hard for them to be the nail that sticks out. All my friends have children, as I mentioned earlier, and they absolutely agree with what I say, but I think for some people it's hard to wrap their head around it because they accept it, but they still don't understand it in depth from the ethical side. So that's the main problem I have with the people, but otherwise I'm very vocal and open about my views. I don't care what anyone says, and you know, I know that deep down inside people know it's the truth, but yeah, they're just afraid to acknowledge that because that's shattering the entire foundation of their existence.
Right. Well said. Well said. Well, you're very brave, and I'm glad that you have you've received support, you know, from those around you, your friends and family. And yeah, no, again, it's like antinatalists being in the lives of children, it's important for antinatalists to be vocal and honest and open about all of this in all the lives that we encounter, as we move through it. How do you feel about nature? Should antinatalism extend to the lives of animals as well? Do you have any thoughts on that side of things?
I've always been sort of someone really into nature. Like, I absolutely love ecology. It's my favorite science to study. I look at maybe just sort of leaving nature alone, leaving it untouched and letting things continue as they are for whatever reason, with as little interference from us as possible.
Okay. Do you have any other, hobbies besides, producing your books and doing your writing? And what other things do you like to do?
Oh, I love crafts and anything sort of artsy. I like reading, writing poetry, and going for long walks and swimming.
What do you think of the antinatalist community as it exists today?
I think that I've tried to find my place in every single community, whether it's politics, social groups, and other things, but I never found anyone in my entire life who has validated my existential feelings or anything like that as much as antinatalists. I feel that it's one community that I can speak to without any filters, and I'll just receive support and love from these people because they're open and honest. And I really love the fact we're a diverse artistic group of people. Like, I've seen some amazing poetry written on antinatalist Twitter, and I just love the creativity. So, and I think all of us have been hurt to some extent in our lives. So the creativity kind of, the pain manifests as creativity for us. But it's good we all have the same common goal, And it's great to see that.
100%. 100%. Yeah, we are such a creative community. Marvelously so, honestly. And that's been an incredible aspect to watch grow over the last nearly 11 years for me personally. And I also agree with you 100% that I love how the diversity of antinatalism. I mean, antinatalists come in all shapes and sizes, all places of the world, all ages, all backgrounds, and that's a wonderful thing to see. I love that aspect of it too, and I'm happy to hear that you've had that that response and you've received that kind of support from the community. That's wonderful. What do you think antinatalists are doing right so far, and what do you think we're doing wrong? And what does the future of antinatalism look like?
I think we're doing something right with the activism and putting it out there and the outreach, whether it's like Stop Having Kids or whether we see other accounts that are reaching out to people. So it's good we're putting ourselves out there. That's definitely the right way to go. What we're doing wrong is sometimes we can be a bit aggressive with our approach. So, for example, there was one YouTuber who had a child and she has a large following, and there were all these antinatalists attacking her. It's very nice that they've got the name antinatalist out there in the media in case people don't know what it is. And they've given us some publicity, but it's also very alienating for certain people. My approach is a bit more gentle, to give people more subtle hints, to give them a bit of guidance and leeway, to sort of make that decision and take that step on their own. So we have to try not to be so militant, but and be a bit more moderate and have a bit more compassion for people that, you know, don't understand. But I think the movement will continue to grow. I mean, with so much happening in the world, with COVID, with everything, with the whole dystopia that we're going through, there's going to be more demand for our work. So we have to start producing as much as we can and proposing it as a potential solution to the myriad of problems that we have. And we will start to see more people looking at it. Like, it was very interesting. I was reading an academic journal where someone proposed antinatalism as a solution for overpopulation. So we're starting to see it more on academic sides. And that's the wonderful thing about Benatar. He opened the gateway, and because of his credentials and work, he's given us credibility. So that's the start. And then we have to sort of continue.
Absolutely. Very well said. And, you know, I agree with you. I think I think as far as the approach, I mean, I think it's good that there's a lot of flavors to antinatalism, and it's good that there's a mix of people taking different approaches. But I do agree that it's very difficult to know how to, you know, what might be right for one group of people or one individual might be the totally wrong approach, you know, for the other. And that's always a difficult thing. But I definitely agree that, you know, we need to be producing. And again, that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy to have to met you and to found your site and, you know, your work, because I think you're producing, you know, things that are really a very high value for the future of antinatalism. So thank you for your work, Sarah. And thank you so much for being my guest today on the Exploring Antinatalism podcast. I mean, you've spoken a little bit about what's next for you and what you're working on. And I'm so excited about all of that. I mean, how can people continue to support your work and follow the things that you're doing? Where can people find you?
At Lone Panda Rhymes is my Twitter handle, so that's where I'm the most active, and my website ananagoddess.org. And just keep going to the antinatalist page, and that will have more updates. I'm going to write more articles and try and discuss antinatalism with other sort of subjects to help people a little bit.
Excellent. And people can find the Princess and the Oracle on Amazon?
Yep.
Okay, awesome. All right, well, once again, thank you so much for being my guest today, Sarah. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's my pleasure.
You can follow Sarah on Twitter and Instagram, visit her website at inanagoddess.org, and purchase The Princess and the Oracle on Amazon. Links below. The final deadline to submit your film or video to Antinatalism International's inaugural year of the Antinatalist Film Festival is fast approaching. To be a part of this historic, first-of-its-kind event, make sure to check the link in the description to visit our Film Freeway page and submit your work before the final deadline on November 1st today. Please contact me at antinatalnews@gmail.com with any questions, and keep an eye on the Antinatalism International Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages for more news on the festival, as well as news about the final Antinatalist Film Festival info session, which will be held on October 20th on Zoom. The Antinatalist Film Festival will be held on the Antinatalism International website December 1st through December 31st. We are so excited to present to you some of the finest video work our community has to offer. Submit today to have your work considered. Thank you for listening to the Exploring Antinatalism podcast. This has been Amanda Oldfan-Sukenik and Mark J. Maharaj. You can find Mark on the YouTube channel Question Mark, and I can now be found on the Antinatal Wolf channel. Keep up with my daily antinatalist news updates at Antinatal News on Twitter. Please follow the podcast on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Buzzsprout, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Amazon, RSS feed, and so many other platforms. Email us at exploringantinatalism@gmail.com. Website designed by the amazing Visions Noirs. Please follow him at www.bilenoir.com, and you can also follow him on Instagram. Logo art by the incredible Life Sucks. Please subscribe to him on YouTube, and if you would perhaps like to purchase one of the new Exploring Antinatalism t-shirts by Life Sucks, you can do that on his Etsy page, www.etsy.com/shop/LifeSucksPublishing. And our new theme music was graciously provided by the incredible I Doubt It. Please subscribe to him on YouTube as well. And make sure to check out our collaborative project together with our friend Evil WB Danny Thomas, The Right to No Longer Exist. Links below. All the best, and bye for now.